Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. This is the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. I'm Eric Balkman from the High Stakes Fantasy Football Hour and the FFPC. You can follow me on Twitter at Eric Balkman and the FFPC on Twitter at FFPC. Today I'm speaking with Chris Puhovich, a player who has cashed more than $40,000 in his career at the FFPC. In the episode, we talk about whether Kenny Stills is a good start if Matt Moore remains the quarterback, who he likes better between Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon, and how good his chances are at winning the $250,000 grand prize in this year's Football Guys Players Championship, having three teams in the top 100 going into the championship round. Also, to kick things off in this podcast, we'll hear from 2016 FFPC Main Event co-champion Nelson Sousa. The winner of the $250,000 grand prize in the contest, along with his co-manager, David Hubbard, Sousa previews his league playoffs as well as discusses Eric Ebron's resurgence and more. You can follow Sousa on Twitter at @the_franchise12. Before we get into the show, I want to remind everyone that you can get a listeners-only 30% discount to a RotoViz NFL pass through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Your subscription gives you unlimited access to all of the RotoViz content and tools, and it helps support the podcast channel as well. Now, without further ado, let's check in with the champ, Nelson Sousa. Nelson, the FFPC main event, the Football Guys Players Championship League Playoffs, starting this week, week 12. The byes are all behind us. Tell us what kinds of changes you guys are going to be making to how you manage the waiver wire and your starting lineups over the next few weeks.
Yeah, just basically, you know, it's shaping out the back end of the roster, you know, probably on teams where we've had one quarterback the whole year. We'll drop a random, you know, handcuff running back that doesn't really have any value right now and pick up a second quarterback. Take a look at a couple of defenses, see if we want to carry two, you know, to play matchups. Same thing, you know, with the tight end, make sure we have, you know, a backup. You know, we own a lot of Jimmy Graham this year, so a simple solution, if we have kind of like a questionable, you know, second tight end, it would be picking up Luke Wilson, and that way it kind of ensures us that we have, you know, playable tight end, because I think if Graham ever went down, Wilson would be pretty solid player. So that's kind of what we're looking at here the next week or so.
We talked, you mentioned the Seahawks tight ends. Let's talk about the Lions tight end situation, because Eric Ebron's target share has climbed once again for the third week in a row. This is a guy that a lot of people wrote off the middle part of the season, you know, and after a lot of people were drafting him fairly high as a potential breakout candidate, he gets 10.9 FFPC points this week. You look at the league playoffs starting this week, is he a guy that should be in tight end premium lineups?
I think he makes for an okay play at tight end, but I think if you're flexing him, you know, over, you know, if you don't have like a wide receiver or a pretty good running back to play in the flex and you're flexing Ebron, I think you're kind of hurting with your team. I don't know how far it's going to really make it in the playoffs, but I think he's solid, you know, to play a tight end, if that makes any sense. You know, I don't feel all that great about playing him in the flex if I can avoid it.
I feel like there's been a lot of successful teams, you guys included in this, definitely, over the past few years, teams that have not drafted a tight end high in leagues, and as a result, they get some pretty good running backs, they get a pretty dominant receiving core, and then they just kind of need that, like, fringe top 12, top 15 guy that they plug in just to, you know, get some points at tight end. And a lot of times you get a guy that's, you know, has the pedigree that Eric Ebron does. If he gets hot and you already have the team around him at backs and receivers, he's the type of guy that could really, you know, make a strong team stronger if he puts the pieces together there.
Yeah, I mean, Ebron, I mean, he's always had the talent. I mean, he's capable in that offense to put up, you know, pretty big games. It's just, you know, it seems like you know, this looked like it was prime, you know, he was primed to have a breakout year. And for whatever reason, I don't know. I think the guy's a head case. He lacks concentration. You know, even last week, you know, he had a pretty solid game. But, you know, I was watching the game, and on the sidelines, Stafford looked like he's, like, yelling at him, you know, because it looked like he ran the wrong route, or he wanted him to kind of, you know, the defense was playing zone, so he wanted him to kind of sit down rather than continue running his route. So, you know, it's tough to trust him. The trend is going in a positive direction, way better than what it was a few weeks ago. But, you know, he's a guy, like I said, that it's hard to trust him right now to play tight end.
Another guy that you really can't trust in lineups right now is Jordy Nelson. This is a guy that, you know, during the first part of the season, even when Aaron Rodgers is healthy, he kind of was a touchdown-dependent guy. And now since Brett Hundley took over at quarterback for the Packers, Jordy Nelson's basically been non-existent. Is there any case that you could make for starting Jordy Nelson in your lineup right now?
I can't play Jordy Nelson. It just looks like Hundley prefers Adams to Jordy. And I also think that Jordy has definitely lost a step now this year. And I think Rodgers definitely compensated for Jordy's, you know, diminished skills. So, you know, with Rodgers out, you know, you can't play Jordy right now with any confidence.
You know, in talking about the Packers receivers, we saw one of maybe the worst offensive performance by the Packers since, I don't know, maybe in the last 30 years. It's tough to at least at home at Lambeau. Yet you look at the box score, Devontae Adams actually had a really good game. 8 catches for 126 yards. I think that there might be some fantasy players, myself included, as the playoffs are coming up here in my leagues as well, that might be a little skittish about inserting him in their starting lineup. But should they be? Because this is a guy that seemingly is, you know, even with the Packers offense just, you know, really on at a new low, Devontae Adams is continuing to make himself fantasy worthy and start worthy.
Yeah, I mean, I was guilty of it 2 weeks ago where I really didn't have any confidence in playing Adams. He put up 20 points. And then, you know, this week, I felt like that was a tough matchup, you know, for Green Bay a little bit. And I thought maybe, you know, hey, there's an outside chance here that, you know, that they could have, Baltimore could have Jimmy Smith on Adams, you know, treat him as kind of like the number one and follow him around. But it really doesn't matter. I mean, Adams just, you know, he looks really good right now on the field. He seems to have a rapport with Hundley. So I wouldn't be, you know, benching him at this point.
Final question for you, Nelson, is you know, before we let you go this week, another big injury to the Washington backfield. We already saw Rob Kelly go down. He was placed in IR. This week it's Chris Thompson with the broken leg. I don't believe he's been placed in IR yet, but he should be shortly. Backfield is now Samaje Perine, you know, leading the way there. And then you also have Jamison Crowder could be affected by this as well, as far as, you know, how what he does very well might actually accentuate the run game a little bit more than the pass game. Talk a little bit about your thoughts on what these injuries to Kelly and Thompson do for the fantasy value for Perine and Crowder.
Yeah, so for Perine, you know, perfect example of, you know, a late season injury heading into the stretch run where there's going to be a running back that, you know, was on nobody's mind a few weeks ago, you know, probably on a few waiver wires, and now he could turn into a potential difference maker. Maybe he doesn't have the talent to be a total difference maker, but, you know, in that offense, you know, he's going to be one of those guys that it happens every year. There's always the, you know, one or two running backs that just down the stretch, you know, weren't household names all season long, and now, boom, they're going to take over. They're going to have a big role, and they're going to be fantasy relevant. So I do like P-Line. I think, he's going to have value for teams that do have them. And then for Crowder, he's a guy that started off really slow. I mean, he was basically a bust this year. He was another guy that, had a lot of, hype going into the season, a lot of upside, and it didn't, for whatever reason, it didn't pan out, which I think it's partly to do with injury. As you know, heading into week one, he popped up on the injury report, last week of the preseason with a hip injury. And I think part of it was he just never got healthy. And now you're seeing a guy that looks healthier, looks quicker on the field. Jordan Reed, Terrell Pryor was a bust. They're playing Doxton. And now Crowder's becoming kind of like the go-to guy. So Crowder's another guy, that you can definitely put in the lineup and know that, he's going to get his share of targets and be involved in the game plan.
Oh, we definitely always like keeping you involved in our podcast listening plan, Nelson. I appreciate you dropping by again this week on the High Stakes Lowdown. Best of luck to you in the main event and Football Guys League Championship playoffs. I know you guys got a lot of teams in there. Best of luck to you. Hopefully the balls bounce your way, and happy Thanksgiving, man.
All right, you too. Stay safe.
Thanks to Nelson Sousa for his input this week. Now here's $40,000 FFPC winner Chris Puhovich.
Chris, when you are not playing high stakes fantasy football, tell the listeners what you're doing for a living.
Yeah, so my day job is corporate finance, right? So that's internal, looking at the company that I work for, and budgeting and analysis. Helping them get a well balanced financial perspective of how the business is performing, areas to improve, stuff like that. And then on the side, I also buy and sell domain names, invest in stocks, and like you said, fantasy football. So I keep myself busy.
Yeah, definitely. And gives you the opportunity for a lot of different things that always keep your mind sharp, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
You have a lot of teams in the 2017 Football Guys Players Championship. And I'm always curious with people who own a lot of teams, manage a lot of them. When you're building them, or when you have the strategy that goes into drafting these, are you trying to apply the same strategy to all these drafts? Are you trying to go zero RB in as much as you can, robust RB? Are you trying to draft some tight end heavy teams, given that it's a high tight end premium contest, wide receiver heavy teams for like a, sort of a, an anti-fragile, aspect of drafting? Or did you try a bunch of these strategies or none, where you're just picking best player available? Tell me a little bit about what your thoughts were as far as how you attacked each of these drafts.
Yeah, sure. So my strategy isn't as simple as zero running back or anything like that. It's more taking a look at who's on the board, the top player at each position, and then how far ahead I think he is above the second guy at that position that I could get on the comeback of the draft. So if a guy I think is 50 points ahead of the next guy that you could take, and everyone else is 20 points ahead, I'm going to take the guy who's 50 points ahead, right? Because I'm trying to put together a well-balanced team where I think cumulatively they're going to have the highest score, right? That's how you're going to place in the top four to make it to the playoffs. Sometimes I kind of like a player, so I really like Travis Kelce this year. So if he was available in round two, I'd take him. I liked Mark Ingram. I would take him. So some of it worked out well. I think last time we talked, one thing I said I was going to do this year was avoid David Johnson, which I did. I took Le'Veon Bell whenever I got the number one pick, and that's worked out well, right? You don't think David Johnson's going to get hurt, but my theory was, Carson Palmer's a little bit older. There's risk for injury. There's a regression that I thought was going to happen. The offensive line was a little bit weak. So, sometimes things just work out for you too.
Yeah, indeed they did for that for sure. You know, I always kind of like looking ahead next year, basically as soon as the current year starts. What do you think about David Johnson next year? I mean, obviously a lot can happen. I mean, they could draft somebody. There could be some offensive line changes. But as it stands right now, do you think this injury that he suffers in week one might actually cause him to be a discount in drafts next year?
I think the QB position is important there, right? So if Carson Palmer retires, even if he doesn't retire, I think you know, he's not going to be a desirable quarterback. If you take a look at the guys this year, right, Todd Gurley had a horrible year last year, but look at the quarterback play last year. Right, it was bad quarterback play. Gurley had a bad year. This year, Jared Goff's playing well. Todd Gurley's playing well. Right, so I think there's a correlation there. Again, I would avoid David Johnson next year. I take a look at Gurley over him. I take a look at Le'Veon Bell over him. I take a look at Mark Ingram even over him. It really depends what you think, but I think, again, the QB position kind of dictates how the running back does in a lot of instances. And you don't see a guy have a breakout season when the quarterback is really struggling. So that's kind of my theory on it.
And I think a lot of people would tell you, too, that when David Johnson had that baller year in 2016, Carson Palmer was really, really playing well, too. So I think that there is something there. Like you said, there is a correlation there. You got to be strong at both those two spots to make the other guy mutually beneficial as far as fantasy goes. You know, you talked earlier, Chris, about trying to get these balanced, you know, well-balanced teams so that you can, you know, on a week-by-week basis be able to not only beat your opponent but put up good points in doing so you can put yourself in a position to make the playoffs and then the championship round. Have you found your teams that have been successful in the Football Guys Players Championship, are they more successful if they're stronger at a certain position? Like if you've had some running back dominant teams where you're starting three or four running backs most weeks, that they're more successful than teams that maybe had a good wide receiver core or, you know, two or three really good tight ends? Or does it really vary? Or have you not seen like any kind of correlation as far as being strong at a specific position goes?
No, I think if you drafted a stud running back, so if you got Le'Veon Bell in round one, right, you don't have to worry about drafting a lot of backups at running back, and so you could take a bunch of good wide receivers in the rounds 3 to 7, and then you could pick and choose right each week based on matchup, which is important. So same thing if you take Antonio Brown, right? Then you maybe take a couple more running backs in the earlier rounds, so you could do that kind of mix and match play. I don't have any teams that I think, you know, I'm going to play running backs, you know, three or four running backs every week. I'm looking at the matchups. I think that's a lot more important than the player. The one thing that I don't like is people who go with, you know, two or three tight ends. That usually, from what I've seen, doesn't work out well. So I try to avoid that. You know, I have maybe two or three teams where I have, you know, I took a couple tight ends, but those teams didn't do that well.
See, now, I would tell you this, that I haven't really seen teams that do take the two or three tight ends early necessarily be all that successful. But I have seen teams that, you know, maybe they take one tight end early, but then they hit on, like, two more in, like, round 10 and round 12. And if you're investing that pick in and then those guys end up to be, like, fringe top 12 guys, I think that then it can work out for you. But investing three like top six round or top seven round picks in tight ends, it just doesn't seem to have a good success rate as far as I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the guys that were being taken in rounds, you know, 5 to 7, you had Kyle Rudolph, you had Delanie Walker. You know, those guys kind of busted compared to where people thought they'd be. And tight end is the highest variance position in terms of point production, right? So they could have 5 points one week. They could have 20 points the next week. I'd rather go with somebody who's a little bit more steady and reliable to put up the points.
Yeah.
So
consistency is really underrated, especially when it comes to a hit or miss position like tight end. If you can, like you said with Travis Kelce, and I was high on him this year, like you were as well. And we've seen it. I mean, the guy, he's consistent. Zach Ertz has been very consistent this year. And there's going to be a lot of teams that win a lot of money this year, based on having those two players for sure. Chris, when you talk about managing as many teams as you have, I'm always curious as to what it's like you know, when you start the bidding process for waivers, you know, if that begins right for you right away on Monday, or if you try to get as much information as you can and you know, then put them in on Wednesday or what have you. What's your bidding process like week by week when you're putting those waiver bids in? And then Sunday mornings, submitting lineups, what's that like when you have, you know, so many lines in the water?
Yeah, so this year I said I was going to draft, you know, maybe 10, 15 teams, and I just like drafting. So I ended up with something like 48 teams, which is a pain in the butt to manage. You know, I spend, you know, of my fantasy time, I spend maybe 80% on daily fantasy and then 20% on the year-long fantasy. So there's been weeks where I just haven't even had the time and I missed the waiver wire. So I think if I had 100% focus, I could do a little bit better than I'm currently doing, but I'm not doing bad with it. My strategy for waiver wire, though, is I don't like to spend the dollars at the beginning unless there's a person that I think is a can't miss that you need to buy. So right now, right, going into the playoffs, I'm taking a look at the other guys. And if there's somebody that I like today that I have to bid on, I know 100% I'm going to get him because nobody else has any dollars left. And I have, you know, five times more than the second guy. So I like to save those dollars for the back half of the year. You know, I'll be stingy, you know, get a kicker here, get a defense there for, you know, a couple bucks. But again, unless you have somebody that's a can't miss, I wouldn't spend a lot of dollars in the beginning part of the year. I mean, if you look at this year, a lot of people paid up for Tarik Cohen after week one, right? I saw people paying $300-$400 for him on the waiver wire, and how did that turn out for them? So,
you know, and the other thing too that you bring up, and I think this is underrated for like the main event and the FPC, is when you have that bidding dollar advantage in those league playoff weeks. I mean, and it's down to like, it's you versus three other teams essentially. And then if you get to the championship, your league championship round, then you can really play, you know, you can really dominate what your opponent is able to start against you when you have that bidding dollar advantage. So I always like having that too. When you can go into this type of format and have that advantage with Fab, it's pretty big. And you're talking about the league playoffs, so it's a big deal, and there's a lot of money at stake too, for sure. The playoff challenge last year, which is something that we at the FFPC offer every single year, you were fantastic at it, to put it lightly. You enter 10 teams at $200 each, and out of those 10, six of them you end up cashing, including third place overall, fifth place overall, beating out hundreds of other teams. So out of that $2,000 that you paid to enter with those 10 teams, you get over $30,000 back. That's a nice little return. I'm curious how you were so successful in assembling those lineups that paid out so well.
Yeah, so I think my approach was to take a look at who is playing in the playoffs and pick who is going to win in each round. And from that, right, you know, I had Green Bay going to the Super Bowl, right? So I said, okay, if I think they're going to be in this many games, I'm going to take who from Green Bay? Who do I want, right? So I'm going to take Aaron Rodgers, you know, because you want the guys that are going to put up the most points across as many games as they're going to be in there, right? So a team that I think is going to be a one and done, I'm going to pick, you know, their defense, right? Because low point average. And so just the teams I thought were going to go far ended up going far, and I picked the right guys from the right team. So it was good too, because I mixed it up a little bit, right? So I thought I wasn't sure Devonta Freeman versus Julio Jones. So on, I think half the teams I picked one, half the teams I picked the other. So at the end, when I had a lot of teams that were still up there in the rankings, you know, at the Super Bowl, I could kind of root for each guy, right?
Right. That's awesome. It could have even been better had the Packers beat the Falcons in that NFC Championship game, and you would have had a lot of Rodgers out there. And you know, I think there's a decent amount of people that thought the Packers could get to the Super Bowl, but certainly it had to be a minority with all those other great teams in the NFC. I don't think there was a lot of people that even thought they were going to get past Dallas in the second round. So that certainly paid off. Congrats to you on that. I want to talk a little bit now about some stuff that's going on for 2017. Matt Moore came in last week after Jay Cutler was concussed and did really, really good, actually. You know, threw for 280-plus yards. And the biggest beneficiary of that was Kenny Stills. So if Cutler – now, this is a big if. I don't know if he's going to, you know, pass – protocol. But if he doesn't, and if Matt Moore is indeed the starter again this week, can Kenny Stills actually be a sneaky second flex start for teams in the FFPC and football guys playoffs this week?
Yeah, I think there's two reasons I would think about starting him. One is you have nobody better. And the second one is if you take a look at your team against your opponent's team and you think that they have an advantage and you say the probability is significantly greater than 50-50 that you're going to lose and you need to take a guy who's kind of a boom or bust, then you want to think about taking somebody like a Kenny Stills, right? Otherwise, if you had, let's say, Devontae Parker as another option, the guy, since he's been back from injury, has averaged something like 5 or 6 catches for, you know, 60 or 70 yards, no TDs. He hasn't had a TD since like week 2 or 3. But he's a lot more reliable, right? So you really need to take a look at the composition of your team, what you expect to land in terms of points versus your opponent, and then do you need a guy that could potentially put you over the edge, right? Because if you think you're going to lose anyway, then what does it hurt to put Kenny Stills in there where he could put up a 20, 25-point game?
Yeah, I just don't understand like the fact that Moore can get in there and, you know, Stills just looks so good. I don't know why Cutler can't do it, but that's maybe a different discussion for a different day. A guy that has missed most of the season and actually came back and was pretty good his first game coming off IR was Corey Coleman this week for Cleveland. Catches 6 balls for 80 yards against, you know, not the easiest matchup in the world in Cincinnati. Can we expect more games like this for Corey Coleman the rest of the season, even with DeShone Kizer throwing to him?
Yeah, I mean, out of 48 teams, I don't think I drafted one Cleveland Browns in any of them. I stayed away from, especially the people who were drafting Isaiah Crowell in the 3rd, 4th round before somebody like Mark Ingram was kind of crazy. But they have to throw it to somebody, right? The problem is Rashard Higgins had one big game, and the next week everyone said, you know, he's going to do it, and he did nothing. He had like one catch. Ricardo Lewis had, you know, a game or two where he had a couple receptions and then nothing. You know, Kenny Britt's been here. He's been there. You know, the most reliable guy is Duke Johnson on the team. I mean, again, you know, Josh Gordon, is he going to come back and play? Who knows? I mean, I wouldn't touch anybody on the Browns team. I'd look for somebody else. So, I mean, again, if you have nobody else better, throw Corey Coleman in there. But I'd stay away.
This past Monday, Josh Gordon started practicing with the Browns again. Can we lump him in to this discussion where maybe he does have a big game here, you know, before the end of the season? But there's really no way to count on him for any sort of consistency. Is he in that pool as well?
No, I mean, I wouldn't play him at all. When he came back the last time, I don't think he had any significant games. He played a couple games. I don't think nothing significant. And again, he's been out for how long? And you saw Le'Veon Bell in week 1, right? So he didn't play in the preseason. He was playing the Browns defense, right? Which last year, Browns rush defense was horrible. They're pretty good this year. But anyway, you saw how he performed in week 1, right? At least from a daily fantasy perspective, everybody was on Le'Veon Bell and he busted week 1. Well, I think that's important, right? When you're out of the game for a while, you're not going to come back strong. It's going to take a while to build up. I think Josh Gordon's been away for so long that I wouldn't play him at all this year.
Yeah, it's difficult because, you know, it's one of those things where it's like you kind of want him on your roster, but at the same time, it's like, when are you – and if you're still playing now for the rest of the season, you obviously have a very good team. It's like, when are you going to feel good about putting him in your lineup? And I don't know, maybe the fact of just having him on your roster is you're just asking to make the wrong decision. But certainly a good stash just to see what happens. And you know, who knows? We'll remain on the edge of our seats watching Josh Gordon to see what happens there. Minnesota Vikings, that backfield continues to produce, but it's just has not been the same guy from a week-to-week basis. Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon, for this next question, I'm going to base this around, let's just say you own both of them for whatever reason. They're both on your team between Murray and McKinnon, and you only have room for one in your starting lineups. Are you playing Latavius Murray, who's been running pretty effectively, gets the 2 touchdowns again this week, or is it Jerick McKinnon, who in a PPR format, really, I mean, he is the pass catcher between the two. Which one would you be playing if you needed one but could only play one?
No, I'd 100% be playing McKinnon. If you take a look, and I was actually looking at these two guys for the Thursday daily fantasy slate. They both get the same number of rushing carries. If you go back the past 3 weeks, they're basically even on rushing carries. And then McKinnon gets, you know, 6, 7, 8 targets a game, and Murray gets 0 to 1. Right. So the from a consistency standpoint, McKinnon's there. The variance is Latavius Murray had two touchdowns this past week. But if you go back a few weeks ago, I think McKinnon put up 20 plus points in 3 out of 4 weeks. Right. So, again, you got to get the guy who gets the most touches, and especially in a PPR league, if McKinnon's catching five balls a week to none for Murray, that's basically a touchdown right there. So 100% I'd play McKinnon every time.
Yeah, and you know, I'm kind of with you on that. It's frustrating for me because I do have one team this year that has Murray and McKinnon on it, and I feel like I've made the correct call between the two of them once so far since Cook's gone down. So I hope that that McKinnon is the correct play from here on out. You know, all the numbers that you're citing make a lot of sense to me. I just hope it translates to the field again, especially this Thanksgiving Day. Give us a player, Chris, before we let you go this week. First of all, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate you coming on. A player that was drafted relatively high this year that you've already given up on or maybe are about to give up on. And then conversely, a guy that since this show won't come out until Thursday morning, Thanksgiving morning, a guy that you'll be targeting on the FFPC waiver wire this week.
So Jordy Nelson, I think I only have him on one or two teams, but I benched him, you know, 2 weeks ago. I haven't played him since. Hundley's horrible, right? He doesn't deserve to be a starter, but and the only guy that he likes to throw to is Davante Adams. So if you look at Adams, he's had big games, you know, 2 or 3 out of the past 4 weeks. So Jordy Nelson, I completely given up on him. He's done for the rest of the year. In terms of targeting somebody, you know, I didn't take a look. The one guy that I had on my mind before I do any research is J.D. McKissic on Seattle, right? So Mike Davis, they tried him this week. I think they just signed him off the practice squad. He got the start. He went down with an injury. Eddie Lacy was in there, right? He looked horrible as usual. Thomas Rawls didn't even play in the game yesterday, so it kind of shows you their confidence there. So I think McKissic, he gets all the targets. He had 5 targets yesterday. I think he had 4 or 5 catches on that. And if they just give him some running shots, I think he could be the starter there. And I'll pick him up. I think the guys that I have at running back are better than him at this point. But, you know, if they make him the dedicated starter, he might be a guy I'll play in a week or two.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a lot of good points there with McKissic. Lacy has underwhelmed all season. Rawls is a guy who was a healthy scratch on Monday Night Football. You have Chris Carson on IR. You have CJ Procise on IR. Mike Davis actually looked good, and then he hurt his groin, and now it sounds like he might not play this week. I mean, that's the last guy standing there. You're talking about J.D. McKissic, and this is a team that has Super Bowl aspirations. This is a team that has a capable quarterback, a pretty good tight end, and a pretty good number one receiver, and pretty decent secondary receivers in Richardson and Lockett. So I think that this offense is going places. They stabilized the line with Dwayne Brown. McKissic makes a lot of sense. There's a chance that if you're putting him in as a flex down the stretch, he could be the type of guy that just comes out of nowhere. And we're talking at the end of the year, like, wow, anybody who picked up McKissic is really reaping the benefits here in the championship round. He could be that guy.
Yeah, I mean, he had, you know, the first game we saw him, he had a good game, which was kind of a fluke because he had limited touches. But if small guys like McKinnon and Alvin Kamara are getting, you know, 15 touches a game, there's no reason Seattle can't give McKissic the same. And again, he's more explosive than anyone else they have on the team. He's the only guy catching the ball since Procise is gone for the year. But again, it's strange. That team's strange. You never know what they're going to do because they fell down early last night, but in the first half, and they stopped running the ball completely. So it was all Russell Wilson. So I'm actually happy with that, right, for all the Russell Wilsons I have on my teams.
Right.
So I think that's good. I think he might be one of the top quarterback the next few weeks. But again, if they start going to the run game and they want to put McKissic in there and see what he can do and give him 15 touches a game, I think he might surprise people.
Yeah, I definitely think you're right. I think he is, especially with we're paring down the rosters now, with the bye weeks are behind us, the benches are getting shorter. If you want to have that lottery ticket type guy, I think McKissic is actually beyond that. I think he's actually just a smart investment at this point, just to keep on your roster for the stretch run. I know you will be in the thick of it for the stretch run, Chris. I certainly appreciate you joining the High Stakes Lowdown this week. Best of luck to you this opening weekend of the Football Guys Players Championship playoffs, and best of luck to you the rest of the way, man. Thanks so much for coming on, and happy Thanksgiving.
Thanks, appreciate it. Same to you.
Thank you for listening to the High Stakes Lowdown, a RotoViz podcast brought to you by the Fantasy Football Players Championship. And thanks to Grapes for our theme music. Please review the podcast on iTunes under the RotoViz Radio feed. It helps us find new listeners. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think. And follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the show by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the NFL podcast homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.